This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Invidious, written by Bianca Scardoni, performed by Bailey Carr. Preface. Truth fluttered in and out of my life like a butterfly, taunting me with its beauty, with its endless possibilities of change and triumph. No matter how hard I tried to catch it, to trap it inside my heart and own it, it evaded me at every turn. Like my destiny, my truth had been written in my blood long before I was born, guided and misguided by those who sought to destroy me. I thought knowing the truth would give me power over it, over my destiny, allow me to shape it and bend it to my will. I thought I would be safe there inside the light. I was wrong. There was no light to be found, only darkness rising. 1. This means war. Thick, heady coils of fog moved with intention, slithering methodically around my legs as I stared up at the starless sky from my bedroom balcony. The events of last night were on constant replay in my mind, racing through it like some death wish I couldn't remember making, some ritual sacrifice I never signed up for. One minute I was at Spring Fling, dancing with the boy from my dreams, and the next I was fighting for my life in a burnt-down church, my own personal hell, where everything was a lie and everyone was in on it. Everyone but me. The betrayal clawed languidly at my insides, burrowing itself inside my soul as it fought to find a home in the agony. I wanted so bad to let the darkness take me in, to let it consume my shattered being and devour whatever was left of me, to erase everything that happened and make it inconsequential. It was easier that way, easier to give up, easier to walk away and never look back. But easier wasn't always that simple. My best friend, Taylor, was still out there, powerless in the hands of an omnipotent revenant who was hell-bent on winning the grand prize. Her life was sitting in the palm of my hands, and walking away from this meant walking away from her, leaving her to the wolf the way I was left to mine. I couldn't do that to her, no matter how bad I wanted this all to disappear. An awful heaviness pressed in over me like a gavel, cementing my sentence in stone. I had less than 2 weeks to fix this mess, to get the amulet back and make everything right again. Unfortunately, I had no idea how I was going to do that. The only thing I knew for sure was that it would all come down to one person, the one responsible for all of this, Trace MacArthur. The beautiful boy from my dreams turned out to be nothing more than a trickster, an illusion I was too blind to see through. He played me right from the start, used me for his own personal gain, and then threw me down to the gates of hell when he was done with me, never bothering to look back once, not even to see if I had stuck the landing. I'd spent the last 24 hours inventing a million different ways to make him pay for what he did, to make him suffer the way he made me suffer. Unfortunately, all of that amounted to nothing, because the fact of the matter was, I needed him. I needed to get close to him again and gain his trust. Only then would I be able to get the amulet back, to swipe it out from under his nose the way he swiped it from me. Of course, in order to do any of that, I would first have to see him. I would have to look him right in the eye and finally see him for the fraud that he always was. Because that's all that he was. A fraud. A calculating liar since kickoff. Everything that came out of his cunning mouth was designed to deceive, and I lined right up, eager to buy every word of it. Visions of his mouth pressed up against mine cut through my mind, puncturing the shaky barricade around my subconscious as I relived the scenes I didn't want to see anymore. My heart throbbed with pain, with a brand of heartache I never knew existed, and I hated him more for making me feel it. He was going to get what was coming to him, I was going to make sure of that. But right now, I had to stay focused on what was most important, and that was getting Taylor back. I looked down at my phone and contemplated my options. Nikki Parker's last-minute evite glared back up at me like an unspoken dare. I knew there was only one reason she would have a sudden change of heart and extend an invitation to me. She was with Trace, and she wanted me to know it. She wanted to revel in her conquest, bury me deeper in the wreckage that was now my life. Well, that was just fine by me. Kismet, even. And lucky for her, I already had a shovel. Nikki's house was exactly what I expected from yet another upper-crust resident of Hollow Hills. Bloated and over the top with all the fixings of a glamorous life, and none of the sustenance to carry it. A short drive from the bordering street took us up to a one-floor glass house that overlooked the town like an empress sitting on her throne. I thanked Henry for the ride, and then hopped out of the car, straightening out my skinny jeans and black halter top. Cold droplets of rain dotted my shoulders like falling tears as my heart began to race in my chest, reaffirming the fact that this was the very last place on earth I wanted to be tonight. I wanted to be back home, back in Florida, living out my old life with my old friends where everything was simple and easy. That life is gone, Gemma. Get the hell over it, I told myself as I pulled in a lungful of air and made a push for the door before my nerve had a chance to bail out on me. Inside, the house was crammed with wall-to-wall students from both Weston and Easton Prep alike. Despite the history, the room mixed together like oil and vinegar, two rival schools blending over the promise of alcohol and a good time. Somewhere through the noise, I heard a girl call out my name as I forced my way through the crowd, but I didn't bother stopping to see who it was. I was here for one reason, and she didn't sound anything like him. Rounding the corner, I walked into what appeared to be the living room, though it was hard to tell since I couldn't see any of the furniture with all the half-dressed, gyrating bodies in the way. The air was thick with pheromones and perfume, and it was making the inside of my nose sting. It was hardly their fault, though. They were here for a good time. I, on the other hand, was not. I pushed up onto my toes and craned my neck, scanning the room for any Adonis-like liars I recognized. Before my eyes made it halfway around the room, I felt someone brush up against me from behind. "What's up, Blackburn?" said Caleb, his hot breath in my ear. He took a step forward and lined his shoulders up with mine. His chestnut hair was pointing skyward and had that messy with a purpose look to it. "Hey, Caleb." There was no point in wasting time with idle chit-chat, so I didn't. "Have you seen Trace?" I asked him over the bone-rattling music. He took a sip of his drink and ticked his chin towards the back corner of the room. It only took me 2 flat seconds to spot them. Trace and Nikki. Together again. My stomach bottomed out as I watched them from the doorway. He was leaning back against the wall, wearing jeans and a fitted white t-shirt that hugged him in all the right places. While Nikki was tipping into him, wolfing up all his personal space with her runway-ready body. She was all dolled up with a skin-tight pink dress and a pair of matching heels that looked like they belonged on a stage. And not the theater kind. "That didn't take long," I muttered bitterly. "It never does," said Caleb. His irritation was evident in both his tone and sour facial expression. At least I wasn't alone in this. Maybe his fixation with Nikki was a good thing. Maybe we could team up and take the two of them down together. You know, like Bonnie and Clyde, minus the murder and romance. "Why don't you do something about it?" It came out unexpected, frantic.
"Why would I do something?"
"Because you like her." I watched his back stiffen at my unexpected accusation. "Why don't you make a move? Stake your claim. Get in the race. Do something."
"Easy, Blackburn."
He started laughing, but there was definitely a nervous pitch to it.
"It's not like that."
God, he was useless. "Forget it. Just forget it."
"Bad day?" he quipped.
Bad year.
You want something to drink?
I shook my head, still staring forward at the real-life nightmare unfolding before me. I felt Caleb's eyes on me, assessing me as I watched them.
You really like him, don't you?
It came out like an afterthought, a passing observation that had just occurred to him.
I mean, I knew you were into him, but it's more than that.
He looked down at me in a pensive way. I don't like him, I said, watching Trace as he leaned into Nikki and whispered something in her ear. My heart sank all the way down to my feet, taking my stomach right along with it. Not anymore, anyway.
Don't take it personal,
he said, taking another sip of his drink as he watched the happy couple from afar.
You're not the first girl he did this to.
Did what to?
You know.
He lowered his voice and leaned in closer.
Hit it and quit it.
My ears damn near melted off. You can't be serious right now. Is that what he thought happened between us? What people thought? I wasn't sure if I wanted to laugh or cry about it.
Come on, Blackburn. I'm not as dumb as I look.
He took another sip of his drink and focused back on Nikki and Trace.
One minute I'm getting you a drink at Spring Fling, and the next you're on the dance floor with Trace. Doesn't take a genius to figure out why you both disappeared.
You're way off, Caleb. Like, on another planet. I didn't leave the dance to hit it, or whatever you called it. He shrugged his shoulders like it didn't matter either way. What about you? I shot back accusingly. I saw you that day in the locker room with Nikki. You obviously have a thing for her. Are you just going to let her play you like that? I goaded.
I don't have a problem with it if she doesn't.
So you don't care that she's just using you? Why don't you go over there and tell Trace? He laughed as though I'd just dropped the punchline to some silly little kid's joke. What? Are you afraid of him or something? I couldn't believe how low I was stooping.
I'm not afraid of that half-blood pretty boy, said Caleb.
Despite his protest, I could tell his feathers were getting ruffled.
Besides, he thinks Nikki can do no harm. He wouldn't believe me anyway.
No harm, huh? What a total crock. My anger notched up to volcanic temperatures. They were so perfect for each other, it was sickening.
Whatever,
he said, and tipped his head back as he polished off the remnants of whatever it was he was drinking.
It's not like she's the only game in town.
He took a step towards me, but I was too consumed with my own thoughts to pay it any attention. Look at them, just standing there! I could feel the rage boiling inside of me, rolling through my blood like an inferno. Caleb said something back to me, but it didn't register.
Someone needs to knock them off their pedestals, I said, and then stormed off into the room.
Apparently, that someone was me.
2. To Nikki with love.
I kept my eyes fixed on Trace as I maneuvered my way through the room. As much as I hated to admit it, it hurt to look at him, to see him going on with his life as if nothing happened, as if I never happened. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew I needed to stay focused on my plan, on getting the amulet back. But it was quickly being swallowed up by the burning desire to make him hurt the way he was hurting me. He looked up just as I stepped around a couple. His eyes immediately found me, as though magnetized to my being. And I faltered, because they were even more beautiful than I wanted to remember them being. Even in the dimly lit room, they glowed like two sapphires that spiked my temperature to unimaginable heights. Heights that I no longer wanted any part of.
Gemma.
His voice was deep, yet strangely soothing. For a split second, I thought I detected a tinge of relief in there, but I quickly batted the fantasy away.
It's so big of you to come, said Nikki, stepping in front of him and then leaning back against him, as though she were his own personal dump truck. No hard feelings, Kay?
Every fiber of my being wanted to slap the lipstick right off of her condescending mouth. With fingernails digging into my palm, I fought down the urge and held on to my composure. I needed to hit her where it hurt, not claw her eyes out. I squared my shoulders and plastered on the biggest, fakest smile I could muster.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, if Trace could forgive you for messing around with one of his best friends, who am I to hold a grudge?
Nikki's eyes doubled in size. Sloppy seconds aren't for everyone, I went on, turning my attention to Trace. But some people aren't that picky. Right, Trace? He stared back at me, expressionless, his eyes giving nothing away.
Well, technically, Caleb had the sloppy seconds, I continued, anger stinging the corner of my eyes.
So I guess this makes it sloppy thirds, right? But who's counting?
You bitch.
Nikki tried to step towards me, but Trace quickly pulled her back, his hands planted firmly on her hips. The sight of it made my stomach turn.
Happy fucking birthday, I said, and walked off without bothering to stick around for the shitstorm that was undoubtedly about to start pouring.
What did you say to them?
Asked Caleb, grabbing my arm as I shot by him on my way to the nearest exit.
What does it matter?
I shook my head, forcing away the budding tears I couldn't seem to shake. Tears that I refused to let fall in front of any of them.
He isn't going to believe it anyway, right?
He paused, thinking about it.
Have a drink with me.
No thanks, I said, staring at the front door. I need to get out of here.
One drink. Come on, Blackburn. You owe me for ditching me last night.
He tilted his head to the side, letting the dim overhead light catch the copper highlights in his hair. Fine, one drink, I nodded, feeling a tinge of guilt for agreeing to go to the dance with him in the first place. I should have been doing my research on Trace. I should have been seeing through his phony facade.
You got it.
He snagged my hand and led us through the glass-endowed hallway and into an industrial-sized kitchen almost as big as the one at All Saints. Apart from the stainless steel appliances, everything else in the room was paper white, right down to the glossy countertops and matching marble floor. I felt as though I'd just walked into some sterile plastic surgery office in the middle of Beverly Hills.
You're going to love this,
said Caleb, pulling me forward so that I was shoulder to shoulder with him. A mammoth-sized plastic container sat on the kitchen island, nearly covering it from corner to corner. It was filled to the top with some brown-colored liquid and thick slices of lemon that floated around the surface like tiny life preservers. Clearly, Caleb didn't know me nearly enough to be a competent judge of what I would or wouldn't love.
What is that?
I asked, eyeing it with suspicion.
Iced tea.
He snatched two cups from the counter and dunked them into the container.
You'll like it. It's from Long Island,
he said, laughing as he handed me a cup.
Thanks.
I swooshed the liquid around mindlessly, surveying it as it swirled around the edge of the cup. I peeked up at my surroundings, gauging my enemy's territory. I couldn't help but wonder how many times Trace had been in this kitchen, hanging out with Nikki after school, eating dinner with her and her family.
Cheers,
said Caleb, raising his cup to mine.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
I tilted my cup back and chugged it down as fast as my stomach allowed.
Easy,
laughed Caleb, pulling my cup away from my mouth.
You're going to want to slow down. Trust me.
I've taken more than a few sips of my dad's wine in the past and was perfectly fine.
I know what I'm doing, I informed, wiping my mouth with the back of my arm. If I need your input, I'll let you know.
You got it,
he said, raising his hands as though backing down from some deranged mugger. I polished off the rest of my drink and then filled up another one. Whatever was in this stuff, it was making me feel better, and I wanted more of it. Caleb was going on about something beside me, but I couldn't hear a word of what he was saying. I was too focused on my escape, on getting it down fast enough, on forgetting. I wanted to forget the devastation that had implanted itself inside my life.
The heartache that followed me around like a curse. I wanted to obliterate every last painful memory that imprisoned my mind, no matter how short-lived the escape would be. Tomorrow was another day. Tomorrow, I would dive back into my reality and let the crushing waves of expectation wash over me again, as it drowned me under its unrelenting weight. I filled up another cup.
Seriously, Blackburn, slow down.
You should probably listen to him,
said a familiar baritone voice from behind.
Unless you want to get sick tonight.
I felt the humming sensation even before I turned around to see him. Trace, that is. He was standing there with his hands in his pockets and an innocent look of concern on his face. Obviously fake concern. I looked him dead in his eyes and took another long, deliberate sip.
Can we talk?
Nope.
Gemma.
He reached out and tried to slip his arm around my waist. The gesture threw me off, but only for a second, and then I realized what he was trying to do. He was trying to touch me, to read my thoughts. I slapped his hand away and took a step back. My cup and defenses went back up, and I took another sip.
Knock it off, he said, grabbing the cup out of my hands. You've had enough.
As if you even remotely have a say in the matter. I swung around to get another cup from the counter and stumbled forward, losing my footing like a blundering ballerina. Caleb's arms quickly caught me before I could faceplant into the oversized punch bowl. Iced tea bowl, whatever. I looked up at him and tried to focus. He appeared to be swaying a little. Or maybe it was the room that was moving. You have really pretty eyes, I said to Caleb, staring up at his Sahara Desert-colored eyes. They'd look smokin' with some black mascara.
Thanks, I think,
he laughed.
Yours are pretty nice, too. All right, that's enough, said Trace,
clutching my hips as he pulled me off of Caleb.
You're going home.
And Miss Nikki's bitch bash? Nuh-uh, I quipped, pivoting around to face him. My words drifted off into nothingness as I glanced up at his gorgeous face. At those eyes. Those beautiful, shimmering, storm-churning eyes. His dimples appeared as his plush lips hiked up at the corners. Apparently, he liked what he'd heard.
Only if you meant it.
Let me go, I demanded, though it lacked punch. Being this close to Trace was no good for me, and I knew that. But the room was definitely spinning now, and I wasn't even sure I could stand upright anymore.
I'm not letting go.
He lowered his head to mine, bringing our faces within a dangerous whisper.
Come home with me.
My heart rate picked up its thrum, a desperate song that begged for my submission, for my utter destruction. I couldn't allow it to take me under. No.
Gemma.
I said no.
Then let me take you home.
I have no home. Bitter, angry tears pooled in the corner of my eyes without my permission. I have nothing.
You have me.
And that's the biggest nothing of all. I shook my head, but it was small and tethered, like a dog on a leash. You're nothing but a liar and a fraud.
It's not what you think, Gemma. I wouldn't lie to you. Not about us. Not about this,
he said, veering his eyes down to our touching bodies.
I don't believe you.
I pushed him hard, causing him to stumble back a step.
Come on, Gemma, don't do this,
he said, closing the gap again. He drew me in, holding me possessively as though he owned me in some small way.
This isn't the place.
It's never the place, Trace. And yet, here we are. I peeled his hands off from around my waist, slow and measured. Every inch of my body ached from the withdrawal. I was like an addict, addicted to his brand of toxicity. There was no rhyme or reason to it, no understanding of heart. The smaller, more lucid part of me knew the truth. I had to hold on to that part and stay strong. I couldn't let the addict within me lead me back into the pits of hell. Not until I was sure I could withstand the inferno. I turned to Caleb.
Dance with me?
Gemma.
You got it, said Caleb, snatching up my hand. Somewhere in the peripheral of my awareness, I knew Trace was watching me as I disappeared into the crowd with Caleb. I knew I'd hit a nerve, and I knew it was what he deserved. I pulled Caleb in closer and glanced over my shoulder at Trace. He met my gaze with what looked like pain-filled eyes and then lowered his head. A strange heaviness filled my heart, and I had to look away. By the time my eyes found their way back to the spot Trace had been standing in, he was gone. I'd done exactly what I'd set out to do, and yet the satisfaction of hurting him the way he hurt me never came. Inside, I still felt broken, fragmented, incomplete. 3. The Purge. The rest of the night was a messy blur, like a palette of colors that weren't meant to blend. I remembered dancing with Caleb, and then with some guy from my chemistry class. And I remember bumping into Hannah and her blindsiding me with questions about Taylor. I remember lying to her through my teeth about it, and doing a piss-poor job of it at that. Mostly, though, I remember the guilty ache in my stomach, followed by the mad dash to get another drink down fast enough to drown out the uncomfortable feelings, sink them all deep enough so that I couldn't feel anything anymore. And then I remember a toilet. "Here's some napkins," said Carly, kneeling down beside me. Her silky, chestnut-colored hair was parted down the middle and fell just below her shoulders in straight sheets of satin. She looked so put together and beautiful with her lightly bronzed skin and kind caramel eyes. It was an embarrassing stark contrast to my puke-covered face. I took the napkins from her and wiped around my mouth before slumping down onto the bathroom floor. Definitely not one of my finer moments in life.
"Knock, knock!"
Caleb tapped on the door as he peered his head inside.
"You ready to get back to the party?"
"Seriously, Kale? Get out of here!" yelled Carly. "Can't you see she's sick?"
I never really thought they looked alike before, despite the fact that they were twins, though under the bright bathroom lights I suddenly saw a striking resemblance. Though it could have just as easily been that demonic iced tea talking.
"Move!"
Caleb stumbled forward into the bathroom as someone behind him pushed their way through the doorway. Gabriel Huntington, my transitory handler slash full-time savior, stared down at me, unimpressed.
"It's Gabriel, you guys! My knight in shiny leather!"
He didn't look amused.
"Can you walk?"
"No, but I think I can crawl."
"Gemma, don't!" cried Carly.
Nikki joined the intervention just as I dropped on all fours and started my trek over to Gabriel.
"Oh, this is rich. Are you seeing this?" I heard her say. "This is what he's leaving me for?"
"Gemma."
Gabriel knelt down to my lower-than-dirt level and picked up my chin, his moss-green eyes bouncing around my face as he inspected my current state of affairs.
"I'm taking you home,"
he said, slipping his arm around my waist and then lifting me up to my feet. My head pounded in protest as the room began circling around me like a merry-go-round I couldn't get off of. I tried to focus my eyes on Gabriel.
"Can you take me home, please? I don't feel so good."
"I already..." "Never mind. Come on,"
he said and led me out of the bathroom, his arm fitted securely around my waist. I stumbled through the packed house, wearing my own version of a searing scarlet letter. Judgment-filled eyes followed me at every turn, whispering mistruths and spreading their lies like a flesh-eating bacteria. I felt like some pariah being ushered out of a party I was never meant to attend in the first place. I bet they couldn't wait to get rid of me. I bet they were all cheering and singing victoriously as they rid themselves of the outsider who couldn't hold her liquor. I could probably hear them if I listened close enough. "Speech it up!" I yelled, though my drivel was promptly swallowed up by the dance track blaring through the speakers. "I can't hear a goddamn thing!" The room suddenly flipped upside down, and I found myself face to face with Gabriel's butt. Honestly, the view wasn't half bad.
"What were you thinking?"
scolded Gabriel as he carried me out to his truck. He had me strung over his shoulder like a listless sack of potatoes.
"This isn't you. This isn't the girl I've been training with."
Maybe that was the point, I mused, my arms dangling down towards the fog-kissed ground. Maybe I didn't want to be that girl anymore.
"Unfortunately for you, you don't have that luxury."
He opened the passenger door to his black SUV and plopped me down into the front seat. After buckling me in, he hurried around the front of the truck and climbed into the driver's seat.
"This isn't a game,"
he said, continuing his tirade as we pulled away from the scene of my apparent crime.
"You're not entitled to blow off steam. You're not entitled to a night of teenage idiocies. You're a slayer. Every minute of every day for the rest of your existence. Don't you understand that?"
I squeezed my eyes shut in an effort to slow down the incessant spinning in my head. "Please, Gabriel, I seriously can't handle a lecture right now. Have at it tomorrow, but please, just give me tonight." I rolled down the window and stuck my head out. The cold wind slapped at my cheeks like a reality check.
"If Tessa finds out about this..."
"She won't find out as long as you keep your freaking mouth shut." I flopped back into my seat and rubbed my temples, trying to stave off the beginnings of an epic migraine. "Damn it." Gabriel leaned over my leg and popped open the glove compartment.
"Here," he said evenly, handing me a bottle of over-the-counter painkillers. "Take two of these and drink plenty of water before you go to sleep."
I instantly felt horrible about being short with him. "Thank you," I muttered, fumbling with the bottle in my hands. "Look, I'm sorry about what I said before. I know you're just trying to help, okay? I get it. I made a mistake. I messed up tonight. I'm not perfect," I defended, though I'm pretty sure that fact had already been clearly established tonight. "It won't happen again." That was the absolute cold, hard truth. I'd learned my lesson. I had no intention of ever taking another drink from an oversized container ever again. The momentary escape wasn't even almost worth the aftermath. He nodded once, seemingly satisfied with my guilty plea. "How did you know where I was, anyway?" I asked him after a few beats of peaceful silence. I was fairly certain, even in this inebriated state, that I hadn't shared my plans with him. He didn't meet my eyes when he answered.
"Trace called me."
"Figures," I said, shifting my gaze to the window. The liar was also a snitch. Sunday came at me like a freight train. My eyes snapped open to a pounding headache as a mess of lights and shadows danced behind my lids like some kind of hellish kaleidoscope I couldn't turn off. Flashbacks from yesterday came cloaked in regret, making me cringe at the prospect of having to face anyone from last night, ever again. Rolling onto my side, I glanced over at the clock on my nightstand. It was almost noon, and I had less than an hour to get myself ready and head over to All Saints for my shift. Undoubtedly, my cosmic punishment for last night's slip-up. To my relief, my uncle was already gone by the time I came downstairs. I wasn't in the mood to answer any questions about my whereabouts last night, or be forced to lie to yet another person. I was doing so much of it lately, it was getting harder and harder to keep all my stories straight. The doorbell rang just as I pulled a cereal bowl from the cabinet. I assumed it was somebody selling something I wasn't going to buy anyway, so I ignored it, hoping they'd get the message and go away. By the third ring, though, I could see that wasn't going to happen. Pulling in a calming breath, I set my bowl down on the kitchen island and went to answer the door. Trace was standing on the other side of the threshold. His long, dark hair was wet from the pouring rain and clung to his jawline and neck in a way that robbed me of all my attention. He lifted his eyes to mine, and my breathing ceased. I so didn't need this right now. I slammed the door shut in his face. 2 seconds later, another knock. I squared my shoulders and opened the door again, working hard not to get distracted by the brilliant blue eyes that seemed to glow against the dreary gray backdrop.
"Can I come in, please?"
"No." He pumped his jaw as his eyes had their way with my face.
"We need to talk."
"Yeah? About what?" I asked, my tone rich with merciless sarcasm.
"Come on, Gemma, please."
As mad as I was, as much as I hated him, I knew I had to hear him out. The clock was ticking, and I needed to find a way to mend this thing with him if I had any hopes of getting the amulet back for Taylor. I only hoped I had enough willpower to do it. I stepped back and held the door open for him. Neither one of us said anything as he stepped inside, careful not to brush up against me as he passed.
"How are you feeling?"
he asked as he followed me into the kitchen.
"After last night, I mean."
"As if you even care," I said, grabbing the cereal box from the counter and dumping some into my bowl. "And thanks for snitching on me, by the way." As if my night wasn't enough of an epic walk of shame, I had to have Gabriel see me in all my post-underage drinking glory. Trace watched me from across the island.
"You refused to let me take you home. What was I supposed to do?
Mind your own business, maybe?"
"You are my business."
It came out hushed, like a secret he didn't want anyone knowing. I speared him with contempt from across the island. "I stopped being your business when you left me for dead." His head snapped back.
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm not in the mood for your games, Trace." I couldn't believe his audacity. "Just tell me where it is."
"Where what is?"
His eyebrows pulled together as if to demonstrate his utter confusion. Not only was he fine, but he was a fine actor, too. "Stop playing games with me," I warned, my fists balled up at my sides. "Where is the goddamn amulet?"
"What the hell are you talking about, Gemma? How would I know where the amulet is?"
he asked, his iridescent eyes piercing holes right through me.
"I thought this was about Nikki."
"Nikki?"
"Because I went to her party,"
he said, with a hint of guilt splattered over his otherwise perfect face. "I don't give a crap what you do with Nikki," I hissed back, lying through my clenched teeth. "I'm talking about what you did to me at the church after the dance. You set me up. You stole the amulet from me and left me for dead."
"What church? I didn't leave you anywhere."
His volume kicked up several decibels.
"You left me at the dance."
I shook my head at him. He was lying. He was trying to confuse me, throw me off.
"You took it. You were there. I saw you do it. Stop lying to me." "I'm not lying, Gemma. I swear it."
Palms down, he pushed forward across the counter and locked eyes with me as if to drive home his point.
"I didn't take anything from you. I don't know what you think you saw, but it wasn't me."
"Then who was it?" I shouted indignantly. "I spoke to you, Trace. I saw you. It was you."
"You spoke to me?"
he repeated incredulously, as though I were making the whole thing up. He started to shake his head, but the movement weakened, and then his eyes shifted away as though he'd become distracted by his own thoughts.
"You saw me?"
It came out in a whisper this time, almost as though he were asking himself the question and not me. What the heck was he trying to pull? "Let me guess, it wasn't you, right? It was your long-lost twin."
"No."
He looked back up at me with deep, impenetrable eyes,
But I think I know what happened. I know who you saw.
Congratulations! I already know who I saw, I said, crossing my arms over my chest. I saw you!
Yeah, you saw me.
He straightened his back.
Just not the me from this timeline.
Exactly! Wait, what? I felt like someone just sucker-punched the wind right out of me. What the hell are you talking about?
I didn't take the amulet. I wasn't there. I know I wasn't there. Yet, you saw me.
Clear as day.
There's only one thing that could explain that.
His voice was low, shrouded in mystery.
Time travel.
Are you trying to tell me that some other version of you traveled back in time to steal the amulet from me?
It's the only thing that makes sense.
I tried to process what he was telling me, but my thoughts were spiraling so far out of control it was making me dizzy. Why? Why would you, or future you, do that?
I have no idea why my alt traveled back, Gemma.
His dimples made a minor appearance as he clenched his jaw muscles in frustration.
All I know is I wasn't there.
I wasn't sure what to believe. In fact, I couldn't seem to tell up from down anymore. How do I know you're not just saying this to cover up the fact that you actually have the amulet and you don't want me going after you for it? His face twisted as though my accusation inflicted actual pain on him.
I wouldn't do that to you.
His voice was so sincere, it was hard not to believe him. Mostly because I wanted to. I wanted to believe him more than I wanted to breathe air. And if this were 7 days ago, I would have taken his word as gospel. But everything was different now. That's just it, Trace. You already did it to me. My voice cracked as the reality of the situation sobered me. No matter which way I spun it, it was still a jagged pill that hurt to swallow. Whether you did it the other night, or you do it in a few months from now, it doesn't change anything for me. The other night still happened. You still did it. The when is just a matter of time. His jaw muscles pumped as he followed my logic. I can't trust you, I realized. The crushing weight of the bitter end descended on me like an ice storm. I can never trust you again.
Don't say that.
I think you should go.
I didn't do this, Gemma. I wouldn't do this, not now or ever.
His glimmering eyes fell heavy on me, on my soul.
You have to believe me.
How do I do that, Trace? Tell me how to know for sure, and I'll do it. I'll believe every word you say. The admission came out without my permission, and it terrified me to hear it. On some level, I knew it was true. I desperately wanted to hear him say the words that would explain it all away, that would chase away the doubt and make everything between us right again.
Gemma.
He lowered his eyes, unable to deliver. Go home, Trace. I pushed the bowl of cereal away from me, my appetite having gone the way of our almost relationship, right down the gutter. Just leave me alone. He shook his head.
I can't do that.
Yes, you can. It's easy. All you have to do is walk away from me, just like you did at the church. I squared my shoulders as the gut-wrenching memories of that night assaulted my mind. I can't trust you, and until I do, until I have proof that you didn't do this, I don't want you anywhere near me.
And if that never happens?
Worry creased his features as he cocked his head to the side.
What if you never find proof that I'm telling you the truth? Then what?
Then this is how it stays between us.
Is that really what you want?
Yes, I answered, though the lump in my throat was singing an entirely different tune.
I know you don't mean that,
he said quietly, moving around the island towards me. Yes, I do, I assured him, but my eyes faltered and I was sure he noticed it. You're dead to me.
And you're everything to me.
His eyes never left mine as he rounded the corner. My heart hammered in my chest as he closed the distance between us. Trembling, I took a step back, but he followed me, keeping the gap between us at a minimum.
"Stop it!"
I held my hand out, preventing him from advancing.
"Stay away from me!"
He was a storm, a raging hurricane capable of obliterating me, and I wasn't sure I was strong enough to withstand its power. Every inch of my body wanted me to surrender to it, to him, to let him take me apart at the seams. He covered my hand with his, holding it against his chest like a quiet love song. I let the warmth from his touch linger on my skin before pulling my hand back.
"I'm not what you think I am."
His hand moved to my face, his thumb grazing along my cheek. My eyes slipped shut as the pulsing sensation overtook me.
"What I told you that night at the dance,"
he said, lifting my chin so that I was looking up at him.
"That was the truth. Don't ever forget it, because I won't ever forget you."
He lowered his head and dropped a soft kiss on my forehead. Before I had a chance to react, he pulled back and walked away, leaving me spinning, reeling, completely alone and utterly confused in the middle of my uncle's kitchen.
4. A Gift from Judas. The rain poured down from the heavens like falling hatchets, heavy and unforgiving of our sins. Inside All Saints, memories of Taylor haunted me at every turn. There was no escape from it, no reprieve from the pain. She was at every table I served, behind every door I opened, in the shadows of every corner I passed. I wondered if she was okay, if she was even coherent enough to understand what was going on. My heart was heavy with grief. She didn't deserve to be thrown into this mess. She deserved to be at home, safe with her family, gossiping on the phone with Hannah or Carly, and getting her last-minute homework done. I put in the last order with Sawyer, the head cook, and started cleaning the tables. The day had dragged on to unfathomable lengths, and I was beyond ready to get away from this place and everyone in it. I had so much on my mind, so much weight to carry on my tired, sagging shoulders, and I hadn't even scratched the surface of my problems. The door swung open, interrupting my thoughts. "Kitchen's closed," I called over my shoulder.
"That's quite all right. You don't serve my kind of food here anyway,"
answered a sultry voice I knew and hated well. I turned with trepidation as Dominic made his way over to me, smiling deviously as though he could hear the fear pounding in my chest. He was dressed in his usual all-black attire and overcoat, and his blonde curly hair was damp from the rain.
"Good evening, Angel."
"Go to hell, Dominic."
"Ah, such a lovely mouth.
A moment of your time, if I may. We have some pressing matters to discuss."
"Discuss this," I said, giving him the middle finger.
I tried to walk away, but he cut in front of me, quick as a fox.
"As much as I would enjoy exploring the definition of such a gesture with you, I must insist you hear me out."
He leaned in closer and lowered his voice to a hiss-like whisper.
"It appears we have a shared goal. Perhaps it would be wise of us to lower our arms and join forces."
"Join forces?" I repeated, repulsed by the very notion of it. "The only thing I want to join with you is my wooden stake in your empty heart."
He flinched back, feigning hurt. "That was rather harsh, Angel, even for you."
"Get out of my way, Dominic." I pushed him aside. "I don't need anything from you, and definitely not your help."
"Very well."
He followed me through the room as I shuffled between empty tables and chairs.
"I was going to tell you about Angel's plans for a certain piece of antique jewelry we both know. However, if you're not interested in what I have to say..."
So help me God, if this is another one of your games, I said, stopping dead in my tracks, I will end your pathetic existence. I turned to face him, arms crossed over my chest. No more games, Angel, I promise. His lips curved up into a devious smile I knew not to trust. I didn't believe him, nor did I trust him. But I was alone in this thing, and desperately needed something, anything, that could give me the edge over my growing list of enemies. My shift's almost over, I said, deciding to hear him out, for whatever it was worth. Meet me outside in 10. His grin reappeared. I'll be counting the seconds. I stepped out of All Saints and into a torrential downpour. The rain came down fast and hard, making it difficult to see even a few feet in front of where I stood. Opening my umbrella, I searched the parking lot for Dominic and was just about to call it quits when I saw headlights rolling up at a steady pace, high beams flashing like a beacon of false hope. Dominic's black Audi pulled up beside me, and the passenger side door popped open, swinging wildly as though plagued by a mind of its own. I took a step back and peered in at Dominic. I'm not getting in there, I called out. We can talk out here. In the rain? I glanced around, looking for some kind of shelter or safe grounds to talk, but came up empty. Come on now, Angel, said Dominic, leaning across the armrest like a wolf on the hunt. If I wanted to hurt you, I would have done it at the church, where there weren't any witnesses. Doesn't that afford me any points with you? Nope. But he did have a point, and it was raining an entire ocean's worth of water. You're breaking my heart, Angel. That would require you actually having one. Rolling my eyes at him, I closed the flimsy umbrella and hopped into the passenger seat of his car, probably against my better judgment. This doesn't mean we're friends, I clarified, rubbing my arms for warmth. And keep your hands and teeth off of me, I warned for good measure. I wouldn't dream of touching you, Angel, he said as he sped out of the parking lot, almost as fast as the lie sped out of his mouth. Unless you absolutely wanted me to. Right. Well, that will never happen. Like, ever. He didn't bother looking over at me when he said, Never say never. Okay there, Justin. Justin? He arched his brow at me, looking thoroughly confused. Never mind. Start talking. The wiper slashed back and forth at full speed, though they barely made a dent in the blur of falling water. Straight to the main event? His onyx eyes poured over me like hot caramel. I like it. Get to the point, I snapped, while grabbing the armrest for security. And keep your freaking eyes on the road! Dominic's laughter filled up the space around me, irritating with its silky smooth vibration. I kept my eyes pinned on the road ahead, refusing to give him even an inch to work with. He settled down fairly quick. All right, Angel, on to the matter at hand. He took a hard right towards the hills and then settled into a steady pace as we coasted up the winding roads, the rain hammering hard against the windshield. It appears we have a shared goal now that we've found ourselves on the same side of the war. What are you talking about? Well, we both want the amulet. We both want Romeo dead.
I don't want Trace dead, I quickly cut in. Death was far too easy of a punishment for what he did to me. I planned on making him suffer for a long time to come.
I guess I'm alone on that.
Dominic, I wasn't even almost in the mood for this.
I jest. He said, though there was no humor in it whatsoever. We both want to get the amulet back from Romeo, he amended. Is that better?
Get on with it.
The way I see it, we're both after the same outcome.
Therefore, combining our efforts would only increase our chances of accomplishing our task.
Why do you want the amulet back? I asked, spearing him with suspicion. I know you don't give a crap about Taylor's life, so what's in it for you?
The satisfaction of helping.
Don't even try, I said, halting him before he could shovel any more crap at me. What's in it for you, Dominic?
Self-preservation.
I shook my head. I don't understand.
Have you ever bothered to ask yourself why Angel wants the amulet in the first place?
He asked, turning serious.
What could a centuries-old vampire possibly need with some old necromancy necklace?
He asked mockingly, as though I should have already figured this out. I assumed he wanted it for its protective powers, I said, though that hardly made sense now that I thought about it. He'd already survived just fine on his own, and even defeated several generations of slayers. Why the newfound need for protection?
If only it were that mundane.
Then what is it? I could feel a thickness burrowing at the back of my throat. Why does he want it?
There is only one thing a man truly wants in life, he said, ready to impart his two-bit wisdom on me. And that's power. Absolute power.
That's what you want, I corrected.
That's what all men want.
Fine, whatever, I nodded, deciding to play along for argument's sake. And how exactly does the necklace achieve that for him?
Because, by possessing the amulet, he would then possess the ability to control the dead.
I looked at him like he was nuts. Are you saying he wants to raise the dead? They couldn't even do it right 2,000 years ago with the best casters on hand. The only thing Angel would raise would be a couple of zombies, if he was lucky.
No, not the dead, Angel, he said, glancing over at me ominously. The undead.
Revenants.
Precisely.
He pulled up to the Blackburn estate and put the car in park before twisting around to face me.
He wants to create an army of undead and come out of the shadows. An army of revenants that will rise and fall to his every whim. Walking immortals that would be programmed to do one thing for him. Overtake the world. Town by town. City by city.
Oh my God. The thickness in the back of my throat tightened into a noose-like choke.
And believe me when I say I will not be controlled by anyone, least of all Angel.
You never had any intention of giving him the amulet, did you? I suddenly realized. You were going to keep it for yourself all along. He nodded, his expression haughty and unfazed.
The only person I trust to be in possession of an artifact that would essentially strip me of my free will is myself.
So what now? I asked, my head spinning a web of tangled possibilities. You'll help me get the amulet back from Trace, and then what? You'll just try to take it from me again, I accused.
I assumed we'd be on the same side now that you've been made aware of Angel's plans, said Dominic, visibly perplexed by my loaded question.
If I don't give him the amulet, Taylor dies. If I do, Angel wins, and we all die.
This can easily be resolved with a simple sacrifice for the greater good of all.
I'm not sacrificing Taylor, if that's what you're implying, I snapped, glaring at him. That's not even an option.
Very well, then, he said,
thwarted by my refusal to abandon my friend.
There's only one option left, then.
What's that? I asked, swallowing hard.
We kill Angel.
5. The Usual Suspects.
Monday morning came at me jagged and unrelenting. Taylor's parents showed up at school with two police officers after she failed to make it home for curfew Sunday night. They'd spent most of the morning interviewing faculty and students about her last known whereabouts,
And since I was the one she was supposed to have been with this weekend, I was also the first one from the group to face the firing squad. I stuck to my story as best I could, what with two seasoned cops hammering questions at me and her parents watching on with tear-filled eyes.